Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
That's all your house is? It's a pile of stuff with a cover on it. You see that when you take off in an airplane and you look down and you see everybody's got a little pile of stuff. Everybody's got their own pile of stuff. And when you leave your stuff, you gotta lock it up. Wouldn't want somebody to come by and take some of your stuff.
And as that classic George Carlin routine about stuff shows, being attached to our stuff is not new, and neither is the idea of decluttering when the stuff is too much. But for some of us, our stuff has crossed the line from funny to nightmarish. Remember the stories about the Collier brothers and their overstuffed mansion that took weeks to clear out after they died? Dr. Randy Frost is a professor of psychology at Smith College who has specialized in diagnosing and treating people who can't stop piling up the stuff. He's the co-author of the new book, Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. Dr. Frost, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
By the way, were you thinking about George Carlin's routine when you and your co-author, Gail Stachiti, named your book?
We were. I've always liked that routine of Carlin's.
And how prevalent is this behavior, the floor-to-ceiling stacks of magazines, blocked doors and windows, that kind of behavior where it becomes a clinical problem?
Well, it's remarkably common, much more so than we thought. There are a couple of epidemiological studies now that suggest that somewhere between 2 and 5% of the population suffer from hoarding.
And is there a typical hoarder?
Well, actually, there are many different forms that hoarding takes, but there are three major components to it, and each person has a little bit different variety of each of these. The first component is an excessive level of acquisition. So it's not just that stuff piles up in the home. It's that people are out actively collecting stuff, either buying or picking up things for free. The second component is once it's in the home, there's a difficulty in being able to get rid of it. Either throwing it away or recycling or even giving it away is difficult. It's almost as though when things come into the home, they become a part of the person and they can't let go as part of who they are.
And listeners, we can take some calls for Dr. Frost. Do you hoard or collect or just feel overwhelmed by the objects that you've accumulated? Do you watch one of the new reality TV shows that goes through homes like these? What's so fascinating about it to you? Call us 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 if you're a hoarder or perhaps a voyeur of hoarding if you're watching these reality shows, 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. As, for example, Dr. Frost, Jersey Jeff has done. He writes, I have an easy way to keep the stuff from piling up in my house. My house has what I call a garage sale closet. All the stuff I no longer want gets tossed in the closet. When it is full, that means it's time for a garage or stoop sale. It's simple and it works great.
That's a good idea. The difficulty is with people with hoarding problems, the attachments they have to these things prevent them from and being able to let go of things at a garage sale. Sometimes people with hoarding disorders will set up a garage sale and end up not being willing to sell anything.
Here's another comment from our website from somebody who writes, I think part of the difference between a hoarder and a collector boils down to wealth and real estate. A bibliophile or a collector of objet d'art or wooden boat models or whatever who lives in a large home with a library with floor-to-ceiling bookshelves and a large entry gallery with display cases is praised. A person with the exact same interests and purchases who can't afford such a home, who lives in a small city apartment, is condemned as someone with a psychological disorder. Fair class critique?
Well, not quite. We have seen a number of people with hoarding problems who are quite wealthy, who have very large homes, and the characteristic we see
as in the Collier brothers who we mentioned?
That's right, as in the Collier brothers, or in Stuff, there are several people we interviewed extensively who are quite wealthy. It's just that whatever space they have available to them, they fill up. Now, it is true that the smaller the living space, the more quickly it gets filled up. But it doesn't seem to matter too much. Even people let me give you an example. We've known people who fill up their house and move to a new one. So they have four or five different houses. All of them are full, and their living spaces are all cluttered. So it's not quite the same thing. There are some differences between people who collect and people who hoard. And people who collect tend to keep all their things organized, and they keep them on display for other people to see. Neither of those things are true for people who have hoarding problems.
Rich in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Brian, up in Inwood, and I thought you'd be interested in knowing that I had a infestation of bed bugs up here, and it was actually, I call it an intervention, because it got me to get rid of 80% of books and files and magazines and everything. So what started out as something negative actually was the only thing that got me to get rid of all the stuff.
Thank you. So that's kind of a natural intervention. Doctor, have you been able to help people with this order, in other ways?
Yes, we developed a cognitive behavior therapy for hoarding, and it seems to work much better than therapies we've used before. Now, it's not perfect, and still, even after going through the treatment, people still struggle with these attachments they have to things. But it's certainly an improvement over how we were able to treat it before.
How can you tell when you've crossed the line? You have a series of photos on your Smith College webpage that show the progression from clean through cluttered through impassable. We've linked to them on our website if people want to see them. At which stage in that series is the line crossed?
For the most part, what we find is people who have a problem are somewhere in between 3 and 4. Now, 3 is just kind of messy, and it's still possible to live in that space. But once it gets to 4, then people have to start moving things off the couch in order to sit down, moving things off the stove in order to cook, and then it starts to interfere with people's life. And that's the real marker of where the problem begins, is when it interferes with people's lives.
John and Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hello. I was just calling to comment. I'm a housing background investigation for shelter applicants, so I visit a lot of people in low-income homes, and hoarding seems to be a particular issue there. And when it's really severe, I don't do this often, I'll sometimes call the fire department because I feel like it's a threat to the safety of everyone in the building, and you can make anonymous tips, and that's something I think people should do in particularly severe cases.
But does that get back to the class question that the earlier commenter raised, John? Are you saying you tend to see this in the low-income homes that you visit?
Well, I only really go to low-income homes. But it does, my impression based on my life experience outside my job is that it does seem to be, I expect it's a depression-related thing, a sort of hopelessness. I'm not going to comment on that.
Wait, well, let's find out, since we have a psychologist here who wrote a book on the syndrome. Dr. Frost, what about that?
Well, we started with the hypothesis that hoarding was related probably to a period of material deprivation early in life. But when we started trying to answer that question, we weren't able to find any evidence that most hoarding cases started when people experienced that material deprivation early in life. So even though we started with that hypothesis, we haven't found any evidence that it's true. Now, there is a correlation between hoarding and income. So people with lower incomes tend to more frequently have hoarding problems, but it's not a big correlation. It's not perfect. So there are lots of people who have plenty of money and who grew up quite wealthy who hoard.
Susan in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I have a couple of questions. This seems to have come on for me more in adulthood, and I'm wondering about the origins of that and why I didn't see it when I was a child. And also, I have employed 2 professional organizers before, and it's been quite costly, and I've tried my best, but it hasn't helped. And I think it's because the organizers didn't understand hoarding. They were trying to use the same techniques. My husband, who's a clean freak as well. What do you recommend?
Dr. Frost?
Well, in terms of treatment with professional organizers, there's a difference really between what an organizer can do and the roots of this problem. An organizer has structure and plans and so forth that are helpful because there are pieces of this that are related to disorganization, attention deficit problems, and so forth. But really, at the core is the attachment to things and the ability to challenge your beliefs about the nature of the things you have. And what I would suggest is starting out by experimenting with things and your attachments to them. And this is what we do in treatment. We have people generate hypotheses about what will happen to me if I throw this out. And we have them try to pick something that's going to be difficult for them to throw out. And then they test those hypotheses. Am I going to feel too badly? Am I going to get depressed? Am I going to feel bad for a week or a month and so forth? And that's one of the things we do in treatment. In terms of your comment about onset, it looks like most hoarding cases begin, or most hoarding behaviors begin around age 13, but they don't start interfering with people's lives until a couple of decades after that.
What do you tend to hoard, Susan?
Well, one of the things that's hardest for me is dealing with paper, information. There's so much paper that comes into the house, even through mail, or I'm a graduate student now, so I have a lot of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Just to figure out what to keep, what to save. I'm a visual person. That's another issue. And I am afraid that if I can't put it somewhere that's logical, if I don't see it, I can't find it.
That's a very interesting comment, because what we find in hoarding is that part of the complex seems to be disorganization, but in truth, it's that people who hoard have a very different way of organizing their world. Most people organize their world categorically, so everything goes in a category and each category has a location. But people with hoarding problems tend to organize their world visually and spatially.
So they leave everything out.
So they leave everything out and everything in sight until it gets covered up by the next layer of things.
Do you think, and I know your book says that people are particularly drawn to magazines and newspapers very frequently, is the digital media era and cloud computing a possible solution for a lot of people? We have about 20 seconds left.
It doesn't look like it helps all that much. There's something about the physical representation of something that gives it vibrancy, that gives it that sort of muscle memory that goes along with the attachment.
Interesting and illuminating. If you want to know more, folks, Dr. Randy Frost is a professor of psychology at Smith College who is specialized in diagnosing and treating people who can't stop piling up stuff. He's the co-author now of Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, and Alan Smith produced this program. We had intern help today from Chuni Chian and Matthew Gurry, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Talk to you tomorrow with George Will among our guests. I'm Brian Lehrer.